Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 84 of Slamfire Radio for November 21th. 21th, right?
Sure.
Oh, that should be an S21st. Close enough.
I just changed the number.
You changed the number, yeah. You didn't look at the appendix after it there. That's not the right word.
I only know my numbers. I don't know my letters.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was home teached, so.
Yes, and your mom teached you everything you know.
Yep. Which kind of insults her when you think about it that way.
Kind of does. I'm sorry, Owen's mom. Yeah, Trevor's not with us this week. Trevor
has bailed.
Trevor's like, I'm done. I'm out. Like, look, this is too much work. I'm going back to archery. I'm going to fling pointy sticks through the air at speeds way less than a 22. So therefore, boring.
Yeah. Could we say that Trevor's fallen off the wagon?
He's fallen off. Sure, we could say that. I mean, it's not true, but we could say it. We can say all kinds of things.
Yeah.
No, okay. Trevor didn't leave. He's coming next week, probably. He did leave us in the lurch, though. He had a really great main topic for this week. And, and then he's like, oh, sorry guys, we can't do it. So I guess this week's main topic is going to suck and it's Trevor's fault. Again, hate mail can be directed to trevorforalot@gmail.com.
Yep.
So all we did this week, I mean, we don't really have, like, we did get a guest, but it's somebody Trevor wouldn't want to talk to anyway. We called up Masoud Ayoub. And Masoud Ayoub was kind enough to join us for only 15, 20 minutes there just to talk to us a little bit about some self-defense stuff. But Trevor wouldn't have been interested in doing that anyway.
No, that's right.
3, 2, 1, and massive coronary and embolism in Trevor's brain. Because no, we unfortunately did not get Masoud Ayoub. But for those 30 seconds there before I said it, because Trevor listens to the show when he's not on, and we never tell him what we do, so... Just now, he's yelling at the radio in his car. He's just yelling, cursing us, and I'm going to get a phone call in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
Sorry, Trevor.
He'll probably text me too.
Probably, yeah. So, anyway, yeah, Trevor will be back next week probably, but enough about Trevor. Let's talk about Owen.
Oh boy.
Exciting. What's up, Owen?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week.
Yeah.
I did nothing with guns.
That's not true. Not entirely.
Well, okay. So you came down. You were here this afternoon.
Yeah.
And we took our guns for a walk.
We did.
And that was about it.
That was pretty much all we did with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's about it. I've been kind of fooling around with an SKS here. Had it apart a million times.
Well, I'll talk about that. What's going on with the SKS? That's gun stuff. Dude, that is gun stuff. That's allowed to be talked about during this portion of the show.
This is a gun show? I didn't know that.
We were just talking like 30 seconds ago. Well, more than that now. I can't count past 30 anyway. But about how we need to, like, our main topics are kind of weak. So we need to, like, really flesh out this part of it. And you're like, yeah, I didn't do anything. All right, well, talk SKSs.
Okay, so I've got this SKS adapter, one of these ones that allows you to take the XDR pistol mags.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I'd try to install that. So I have been we spent most of the afternoon, a good part of the afternoon, messing around with that.
Okay, so before we go further on that, why don't you explain to our American listeners why we want to put pistol magazines in our SKSs?
Yeah, well, up here because of the crazy mag capacity restrictions. It just applies to what the magazine was designed for. So if we can put a pistol mag in a rifle that is 10 rounds, 10 round pistol mag, then we can legally shoot that without being restricted to 5 like we normally would be.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All centerfire semi-automatic rifle magazines are limited to 5 rounds up here in Canada.
So Anyway.
Cool. So yeah, this adapter, what kind of adapter is it? What does it do?
Well, this is it. Basically bolts on, replaces the internal box mag that most SKSs have, and just kind of bolts on the bottom. You have to widen out the stock to make it, fit.
So you have to be a little bit of a carpenter to do that.
You have to do a little carpentry, a little metalworking, a little bit of everything to tweak it.
We should have saved this little conversation for when we have Rob Fortier on.
Mm.
He's a stock builder. We're going to have him on in a couple weeks, I think, and talk stock building.
Cool. We won't talk.
I wonder if we've asked him yet. I know we talked about it, and Trevor talked about it. I wonder if we actually asked. Maybe he's listening. He's like, I'm coming on the show? Yes, you are. Clear your schedule.
Well, that would just be unusual if we asked people that actually listen to the show to come on the show.
Right.
Anyway, back to this mag adapter. It basically adds an AR-15 mag well to your SKS, is what it does.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind
of because not only do we get the added benefit of being able to shoot 10 rounds out of the pistol magazine, and again, a lot of you are probably asking, what the heck is kind of pistol takes a 7.62 by 39 round? Well, they're out there, believe me, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have quick mag changes now because
you actually have a box magazine.
Yeah, before you had to use stripper clips, and of course, putting five rounds out of a stripper clip into a, out of a 10 round stripper clip sometimes is challenging with the SKS. So.
You're not going to get any faster than a box magazine. I mean, you're not going to. I mean, there's a reason why guns take box magazines instead of stripper clips like they used to.
Right.
It's just faster.
Yep.
And you can carry a bunch. And I think you could even put the LAR mag adapters or couplers, base plate couplers.
Oh, the base plates. Yeah, you could have two of them, one upside down, one right side up.
Yep.
And have 20 rounds.
And now Daniel Shaw's mind is blown again.
Again. He's like, what is that? That was crazy.
So that's kind of what I've been playing around with. I guess we're hoping to maybe carry them at Project Ventures. And so it kind of was time to start.
Research and development, making sure that the thing actually works. And
exactly.
Let's just say right now, it's just, this is not a plug and play.
No, it is
there's,
not.
There's a bit of work involved making this work. But I think if we can get it to work properly and reliably, I think it's a great way to increase the capacity of your SKS and really improve its versatility for sure.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing that I've done to it that's complicated.
Right.
I mean, I think if you followed the instructions very carefully.
Unlike some people, us.
Unlike me, who took it apart and just started filing and cutting. Yeah.
What happens if I do this? Well, the stock cracks. Oh, well, look at that. It does.
Well, I don't think they say anywhere not to use a chisel, but anyway. Yeah. So, it's fun. I like working on guns, and this was one way to... I hadn't really done a whole lot of working on them in a while. I shouldn't say that. I guess I worked on that M305 to put the stock
on. That's true. Yeah.
Talked about that last week.
And I didn't even, I was there all afternoon and you didn't haul it out of the closet for me to look at.
I know. I even said.
You even said, you got to see my M305. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And then that's while we were out hunting. So by the time we got back, we'd completely forgotten because we were so excited about all the game that we flushed and saw.
Yeah.
Wait.
There was a lot of squirrels. That was
there
it.
There were a lot of squirrels. But that was it. Kind of like one of our shows. Kind of like Toby and Styx, one of their shows, all kinds of squirrels.
That was I'm trying to think, that's about it. At some point I'm going to put some sort of adapter on my Kydex holster for my antique revolver, and I'm going to mount it on my G-code thigh rig.
Oh, that'd be cool. Then you can carry an antique revolver in a modern drop leg or thigh rig holster in Kydex legally out in the woods. There's some sort of anachronism going on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of different. I don't know. I got to get some more hardware to make it work for that, I think.
But that'd be cool, though. Nice, comfortable way to carry your gun.
Well, I don't like it way up on the hip.
No.
I find it doesn't carry well, and it's hard to get to.
Do you have childbearing hips like Tommy does? Or
No,
is
I
that
don't.
What the, oh.
I was gonna. Nah, yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
All right, then.
I don't. It's just very high up, and if you're wearing any kind of extra clothing, it it's covered up and it's under jackets and
yeah, it's hard to get to. If it's on your thigh, and even better, if you're out in the woods with it, nobody can then claim you're carrying concealed if it's on your thigh. So makes a bit more sense there.
Yep, yep. So someday, maybe I'll get around to that if I get the hardware.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, so we went hunting today. What did you take out hunting? What were we going after?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were grouse hunting. Yes, I did have a couple slugs with me just in case.
Because deer season's for two more days, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And somebody got a deer today.
Yes, congratulations, Random New Brunswick Dave.
Yeah, he's a nice looking
showed me up again, shot another deer. Every year, it seems like he says, I don't think I'm really going to deer hunt much this year. I don't really need a deer. I've got lots of meat in the freezer. And every year, he shoots another big deer. Meanwhile, I can't seem to see anything. I didn't see a single deer this year.
No, I saw four, and I wasn't hunting them.
Yeah, so anyway, but I don't spend a lot of time at it either like he does. Right. He puts the time and the miles in.
Yeah, it's cool.
But I was carrying my Beretta Extrema 2, so semi-automatic, my goose gun. But thankfully, we weren't in the woods a whole lot.
Yeah, that thing is long. Well, compared to the gun I had.
Yes, yes, we kind of held. I had my
little 16-inch Warrior shotgun, and holy cow.
Yeah, we held them up side by side, and it's like a foot and a half. Mine's a foot and a half longer, I think.
The barrel on the Warrior didn't even come to the end of the magazine tube.
Yes.
On the one shotgun. It's crazy.
So, yeah. It was fun. Good to get out. I hadn't been out in a while, so maybe next time we'll. Not a whole lot of time left. Only another week in the season. 2 weeks.
For grouse?
Yeah.
I thought grouse went until the end of December.
No, usually it goes like the first week of December.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then, the end of December is when you can stop wearing orange, and then rabbits are good up until the end of February. That's what it is. I knew the end of December was a limit for something. It's the end of orange. After that, you don't have to wear your hunter orange. That's what it is. So, yeah, we've only got a couple more weeks for birds. Better get back out there then.
I haven't shot a single one this year. It's pathetic.
That is kind of. That's all right, though.
But I did shoot a 285-pound bear, so.
That kind of counts. That counts as, 285 grouse, basically.
There you go.
I need to shoot 283 more to catch up, basically.
All right. So what did you do?
Well, I went hunting with you, but we talked about that already. We saw nothing but squirrels. And like I said, had my Warrior shotgun with me. I went hunting with Curtis last weekend after the show. We went out for basically all day Saturday, and we saw four deer. Two of them we saw two at a time. Two of them we started out probably 250 yards away from them. They were across the field. Mm-hmm. And we eyed them as long as we could, and it turned out that they ended up being does. Neither of them had antlers, so neither of us were hunting deer anyway. We just like seeing deer out in the woods. So anyway, I started walking toward them just to see how close I could get before they took off, just because why not, right? Mm-hmm. So I start walking nice and slow, and first 50 yards, they don't even see me, and then I start getting within about 180, 175 yards, somewhere in there. And they perk up and their tails come up and they're getting ready to go. And so I just make a couple like grunt noises and their tails go back down and they go back to eating. I'm like, man, that's funny. Let's see how long I can do this. I got within about 100 yards of them before they finally left.
Wow.
We went back and forth between them getting alarmed, and I'd just grunt and they would go back down to eating, and then I'd take a few more steps and they'd get what? It must be a buck coming. I don't know what they thought, but I was doing something that they liked, and they just kept eating, and I just kept walking. So I definitely got close enough that I totally could have taken one had I been deer hunting, even with a shotgun with slugs, like 100 yards and a deer with a shotgun with slugs is no problem. So it was kind of neat to see that it was possible to get that close to them. And then later on that afternoon, we were 20, 30 kilometers away at that point. And we saw two more on my parents' property. So we only saw the back end of them. We didn't see any antlers on them either, just because by the time we saw them, they were already just tails in the woods taken off. But
yeah.
It was neat to get out. We were going after grouse and rabbits, and we didn't see any No, I think we flushed a grouse. I think that was it, though. We didn't actually see it, or take any shots. But it was still fun. We just hung out all day out in the woods. We brought our food with us. We lit a campfire and had lunch out in the woods, and just kind of spent the day out and about. And yeah, we didn't really see anything or take anything, but you know, a bad day hunting is better than a good day at work. So
yeah, there you go.
So we did that, and I've done some hunting on my own. But again, it's the basic story. I've seen not a lot, but I've seen a fair share of grouse, but so far I just haven't been able to get any good shots on them. So I haven't taken any since the last time I talked about them. But still, again, it's just good to be out hunting and stuff. I made another YouTube video, and this one will be posted probably by the time the show goes up. So you guys may want to go over and check that out. It was kind of interesting. It's on the MMATT YouTube channel, so MMATT on YouTube. And what it is recently I saw a video. I don't know if you saw this, Owen. Some guys down in the States have been putting 22 caliber air rifle pellets into their 22 rifles, and they seat them up in the lands and grooves of the rifling, and then they put a nail gun blank. It's basically a 22 caliber shell just filled with propellant designed for driving nails into concrete. And they put that in behind it, and they were shooting them just to see how fast they would go. And it turns out they were getting close to 3,000 feet per second.
That's crazy.
Yeah, very crazy. They weren't having very good luck with the accuracy, but they were getting some screaming results, and they were blowing up pumpkins and watermelons and juice cans and stuff, and they were making an impressive bit of demolition with those with that setup. So I had to go and do it myself. But I wasn't going to make a video on it because I was just going to go out and do it and have fun. But on my way out to go to the range and try this out, I'm like, wait a minute. Tannerite needs like 2,000 feet per second to light it off. Rimfire won't normally do it, but this might. So I grabbed the video camera and recorded the events as they happened. And you'll have to go check out the video to see if the pellets traveling at that speed will actually light off tannerite.
Yes, I did watch that video. I watched the video you did. You showed it to me when you were here this afternoon. Yeah, it's a pretty neat concept. I don't know. Do you think it would be possible to mount the bullet in like a projectile in the casing and
well,
have
they
it kind
tried
of pre-built?
That. What they ended up doing at one point was they were taking the 22 cal pellets and like hot gluing or crazy gluing them to the end of the crimped blank. But what happened was because the pellet wasn't like pushed into the lands and grooves of the rifling already, where it had to travel that short distance in the chamber, the skirts of the pellet were just overexpanding and coming right off. And so it really let it up the chamber really bad, and they got like almost no accuracy at all at that point. So the only thing I could think of is maybe I don't know, like a stinger case, because they're a little bit longer. Maybe if you took the bullet out of a stinger and put the pellet in there, but
because they're almost like a 22 short, aren't they?
The blanks are the ram set blanks. Yeah, they're not the full length cases, I don't think. No. But anyway, it was a neat experiment to play with. So it's definitely not a practical thing to do, but it was definitely fun. And yep. what more do you do with guns and have fun, right? So definitely was a fun week. And the last thing I want to talk about is my shotgun adapter arrived. It's a gauge. It's from GageMate. It's an adapter that you put in your single shot or over and under or side by side shotguns that allow you to put in different calibered ammunition. So you can get them for 9mm, or you can get them like you can get 12 gauge ones that lets you shoot 410 out of it. I don't know why you would want to do that, but you can. But anyway, naturally, I got the 22 caliber one, so I got a little adapter and it sits right into my 20 gauge shotgun, and I can just put a 22 round into that and then shoot 22 through the barrel of my shotgun. So it's pretty neat. It's not as accurate as I hoped, but it's more accurate than I thought. So you guys can kind of judge for yourselves how effective that is, I guess. I am making a video on it, and it'll be up on YouTube probably next week. But it was neat to play with. It's loud. I did not think that it would be loud because, I'm thinking it's a 16-inch shotgun barrel. Like, it's going to be, you know, quiet, if anything. But because the adapter is only 2 3/4 inches long, it's like shooting a pistol, you know, through a hollow tube. So it was actually quite loud. But I think the accuracy that I was getting with it, just messing around with it the little bit that I have so far, I think it would be acceptable, you know, if you see a rabbit kind of just sitting still, like he's frozen, like he's not, not flushed yet, not taken off. I think it would be acceptable to take a rabbit probably 10 yards, about 30 feet. Anything past 30 feet, you're probably not going to get decent enough accuracy to get an ethical shot. But inside of 30 feet, if you do some practice and figure out where it's hitting consistently, because it does hit consistently as long as you do your part. So I think it would be, you know, a good way to not blow rabbits in half with your 12-gauge shotgun if that's all you've got and they're sitting up nice and close. But it is a warm weather sort of deal because you'd need your fingernail to pry out the spent shell. So up here in Canada during the winter, this isn't going to see much use. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. So that's neat. Yeah, it's always nice to have options.
Yeah. You know, and it takes up next, you know, it takes up one loop in my, on my gun where I have a cartridge, holder thing. One of those elastic ones that just go around your buttstock. So I just leave it in one and the other four are filled up with 20 gauge shells, so you know it doesn't take up hardly any space. It's always there, and I've always got 22 ammo kicking around somewhere, so at least I've always got that to shoot if I needed to.
Yep.
But anyway it was kind of a fun week for me, a lot of just goofing off and having fun and blowing stuff up and stuff, so that may have given away the ending to my video. I don't know. Viewers will have to go check it out for themselves to see.
Yep.
Anyway, I guess we can move on to some news. We do have some upcoming events, although I forget what they are. Trevor said he was going to put them in this week, but he didn't. So, again, trevorforlott@gmail.com. Send your questions about upcoming events to him. So we'll move on to the news then.
Alrighty.
You want to read this?
Sure. A West Virginia Sunday school teacher was walking home after church when he and his fiance were surrounded by a group of 9 men who began making threats. Chris and his fiancé were approached and circled by the 9 men, one of which, who was armed with a knife. Finally, Harris. Okay, so now they've changed his name. I'm assuming this must have been his last name.
Yeah, Chris Harris is his name, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
Finally, Harris, not wanting to have to shoot anybody, retrieved the gun from his fiancé, who had the gun, and fired a warning shot, prompting the men to flee.
Okay, well, right there, you should be carrying your own gun there, Chris.
Yes,
I'm just saying. So. And if your fiance has a gun, maybe she could have shot the gun, but whatever, carry on.
Yeah. Police arrived and handcuffed Harris and charged him with wanton endangerment for firing a gun in a public place.
Oh, yeah, no, that makes
sense. Both Chris and his fiance called this experience the scariest moment of their lives, feeling their lives were threatened. Chris used the legal gun to fire a warning shot. It was one of the most scariest experiences I've ever been through, Roxby told WTOV television. They surrounded me saying they were going to rape my wife in front of me and cut me, Harris said. The police officers didn't know the gang of 9 and instead arrested one of the victims. Harris is now free on bond.
So they get surrounded by a group of 9 guys who have a knife and are taunting them and threatening them. I'm going to put in the word foolishly here, fired a warning shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that may not have been the right decision. However, I don't think the police should have arrested him and not gone after the gang of 9. It sounds like they showed up and went, oh, they're gone? Oh, you're still here, though. We'll just arrest you. That's an easy charge.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't want to do any work. I mean, why would I go after the 9 guys? They've got a knife. I'm scared. I'm going to get this guy instead. He's right here.
I mean, it should be said he is totally wrong for firing a warning shot, and you are not in fear for your life if you could just firing a warning shot.
Yeah. When he pulled the gun out, if they continued to advance, he should have just started shooting for effect. You know, shoot to stop the threat. If there's a threat, shoot the guy with the knife.
Yep.
That's the other 8 guys' warning shot.
Yes.
You shoot the guy with a knife, and the other 8 will run away, and then you've got your assaulter right there for the police to arrest when they show up.
Yeah.
You know, that would be what I would think would be the proper thing to do. I mean, don't take my advice. I don't know anything other than, what I've learned on here, but you know.
Well, it would be interesting to know, and of course, these news stories never give enough information.
No.
It would be interesting to know if when he produced the gun, if they continued, or if, you know, so many situations are stopped just by a presentation of a firearm.
That's right. And I wonder if this was, he grabbed the gun and shot it.
Yes.
Without presenting it, really, just grabbed it and shot it, which, great,
yep.
Do that, but do it to center of mass of the guy who's threatening you.
Yep, exactly.
You know, but, and the other interesting thing to note would be, where did he fire the warning shot? Did he shoot it up in the air? Did he shoot it into the tree? Did he shoot it into the ground?
Yep.
What, you know, did he know where that bullet was going? If he knew where it was going, then you can't charge him with wanton endangerment of public because he knew where the round went. It went into, you know, the dirt. Sounds to me like he might have fired it into the air, which, you know, that's foolish. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's not the best idea.
No. So that's unfortunate. It's you know, warning shots, they're just not a good idea. They really aren't. Despite what I have said in previous shows and despite what I will say in future shows, because I'll stick to this as long as I live. But the reality is he should have shot the threat or, you know, pulled the gun. And if that didn't work, then yeah, they continue to advance, shoot the guy with the knife and then, you know, deal with it. I understand that he didn't want to kill anybody and that's great. But if you don't want to kill somebody, don't carry a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Carry pepper spray or a taser. I mean, there are other things that you can carry if you don't want to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And you know, it's to be noted, you don't carry a gun to kill people. You carry a gun to stop a threat. It just happens to be the most effective way to do that is to shoot them in the heart or the head.
Well, and it should be noted that along with carrying a firearm or even using a firearm, but mainly for carrying a firearm, there is a certain mental what's the word I'm looking for?
Preparedness or...
Yeah, there's a certain mental state you have to get to. And, and if you're not at that state saying, I can use this, I am willing to use this to potentially end someone else's life, you probably shouldn't be carrying it because then it becomes more advantageous for the other person.
That's right. And,
you know what I mean?
And that's what happened here. You know, it became more advantageous for those nine guys because they're still free.
Yep.
Because he wasn't willing to put someone on the ground.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not going to fault a person for not wanting to shoot someone.
No,
you know, not everybody has that mindset. And that's not a fault of a person if they don't. There are other options for people who are not, you know, at that place. And that's fine. Like I said, pepper spray or a taser or a baton or whatever is legal in your area. There are other options. Just... Don't carry a gun if you're not ready to use it. You're gonna either hurt somebody else or you're gonna get hurt because of it. You gotta be prepared.
This guy could have used a Mag 40.
He could have used a Mag, yeah, that's what Trevor's probably gonna say too. Could have used a Mag 40. So that's unfortunate. Oh well, I hope he gets off without serious charges and maybe if there's any update to this story, We'll be able to share that, but, you know, we hardly ever get updates to stuff like this. All right, well, let's move on to the main topic then. This week's main topic is varied and multiple because we didn't really come up with a good strong one to kind of occupy the main section of the show to really dig deep. It's Trevor's fault. I mentioned that earlier, right? It's Trevor's fault. He had an awesome topic. It was a time sensitive one though, so we have in fact missed it and we won't be able to get it again. And so it turns out that, Hickok 45 just, you know, he'll just never be joining us. So, and that's Trevor's fault. So those Hickok 45 fans out there, you can hate mail. It's trevorfurlot@gmail.com. Just saying. I'm kidding. He wasn't going to do that, but you know, we should have Hickok on again sometime. We had him on CRR back in the day. We should get him back on this show. That'd be cool.
It would be cool. I think I missed that show. I don't remember hearing that show.
Oh, really? It was a good one. It was right after we had Steve Lee, because I remember I emailed Hickok and I said, hey, we had a pretty cool podcast up here in Canada and we were wondering if you'd like to come on, talk about your YouTube channel and just guns in general and stuff. And, you know, I noticed you had Steve Lee on your channel here a couple weeks ago and Steve and I, and I said, and we just had Steve Lee on our show. So, you know, it's kind of a, you know, trying to make us sound a little bigger than we were. So he would come join us, and he writes back and he says, "Oh, well, if you had Steve Lee on, I'm not sure if I want to be associated with that kind of company." He was, of course, kidding. Yes. And then he did come on and talk guns with us for a bit. And in fact, we made it onto one of his videos. There's one of his earlier videos. He is shown at one point during a compilation video. He's shooting in the backyard with a phone up to his ear. And with the phone, we're on the other end of that line when you see him with the phone up to his ear. He was talking to us while he was shooting in the backyard.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was a good show. I remember that. I should send him an email, see if he's up to coming to join us again.
Oh, yeah.
But anyhow, that's not our main topic at all. Let's have a main topic of what guests have we had on that were really cool, but we don't have on this week.
What guests have we not had on that
that would be really cool to have on?
Yes.
Well, we got to have Masad Ayoub on at some point, I think. I know I'm setting the bar high there, and I'm going to disappoint a lot of listeners whenever we don't ever get him, but he did join Toby and Styx on an episode recently. So if he can go hang out with them, of course he can come hang out with us. And they even talked about Trevor. So we just got to get Trevor to ask Mass, and Mass will be like, "Oh, Trevor open carried in Utah. Of course I'm going to talk to him." Because that's, So anyway, we'll try to get that sometime. That'd be cool. But anyway, this week's topic, what was it again? Oh,
you're going to school us all on how to take photographs of guns.
Well, I'm going to try. I'm not a photographer by trade. I dabble in the art of photon capturing. I just made that up just now.
Pretty cool.
Photon capturing. Yes, I'm hunting photons. But I guess I've been known to take a couple of good pictures of guns and stuff. And so, you know, we talk a little bit about how to take good pictures of your guns and how to take good pictures with your guns, because that's another art all into itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, how to take a good picture of your gun. First of all, you need a lot of light.
I was just going to say, because I'd never be able to. I've tried taking pictures. You know, you put the Glock and then the AR and the Glock knife and then scatter some bullets around. It never works out. It just never looks right.
Yep. Now, there's a couple of things that you can do. Like I said, first of all, you need a lot of light. If you can get natural sunlight, that is the best, I find anyway, for taking really good photographs. Just because you can't beat natural. It's just super bright. The brighter it is, the more photons are hitting the sensor on your digital camera, and the crisper your image is going to be. Now, the other option you can do, and that's an advanced option, but I'll talk about it a little bit more later, but it's doing long exposures of guns, and you can do that with guns because they don't move around on them on their own, unlike children or pets or what the liberals think guns do by themselves.
I was just going to say, I don't dare leave mine alone because they might run off and kill someone.
So we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But yeah, you bring up a good point on composition and what looks good in real life, like not through the viewfinder of the camera, what looks good, you know, sitting on the table or sitting on, you know, wherever you've set your picture up, doesn't necessarily look good through the viewfinder. Your viewfinder is only capturing a single dimension, well, two dimensions, I guess, up length and width, but you don't really have depth with your pictures. You can sort of simulate depth, you can get depth and make your pictures look like they have depth, but really they don't. They're a two-dimensional image. So it's really important to stage your pictures looking through the camera. Don't set it up and then take a picture.
Right.
Set it up with your camera where it's going to be. And I recommend using a tripod if you can, because you can set your camera up, turn on the viewfinder, and then you can use the viewfinder as you arrange things in the photograph, where you want them. And it's important, especially if you're doing like what you said there, your AR, your Glock knife, some mag, some ammo. You know, you have multiple subjects in the picture. You need to really fill the frame. So the AR should be, you know, one corner to the other corner, diagonally maybe, or across the top.
Right.
You don't want kind of blank space. I mean, you can be artistic about this too, and sometimes blank space can really tell a story. But most of the time, if you're just taking a picture of a gun, you want the details. You want the gun to look good. So fill the frame as best you can. Get as close as you can, because again, you don't want that extra dead space around the edges. So fill the frame completely, use lots of light, and you can use multiple light sources as well. So if you have, you know, the window open because it's nice and sunny out, that fills the room. But I've done that, and then I'll also bring in other lamps and sometimes even flashlights. And I'll point the flashlights sometimes in such a way that they will reflect off of like the side of the AR or off the Glock. So you get sort of a glare off of it almost. It really adds some contrast and really shows the characteristic of the gun. When you're looking directly at an AR, if you just look straight at it without moving your head, it's kind of featureless because it's usually one color. Everything sort of melds in together. And so I find that bouncing light off of certain characteristics or certain portions of that gun really kind of gives it a depth, a three-dimensional effect, so almost. So that's something you can try. So experiment with, first of all, composition. So set the gun up, the picture up the way you want it through the viewfinder, and then experiment with light. Now, the next thing you can do, depending on what kind of camera you have, if you're using just like a camera phone, you're probably just stuck with the settings that they've given you there on the phone. You're not going to be able to do a whole lot with it. But if you've got even sort of a mid-range camera, a real camera, they will often have an automatic mode, but then a manual mode. And that manual mode allows you to adjust the shutter speed, allows you to adjust the aperture, allows you to adjust the f-stop, allows you to adjust the ISO, a lot of different things. And you can mess with those, and you can take some really interesting photos just playing with those different settings. And this isn't a photography class, so I'm not going to teach you what all those things are, but really briefly, the shutter speed is how fast it's clicking the picture. So if you have lots and lots of light, you're going to have a very fast shutter speed. If you have low light, you need a very slow shutter speed. And I'll get to that. I'm going to back up to that in a couple minutes because you can get some really cool effects with that too. Your ISO, and I think the ISO and f-stop are sort of related. Oh, no, they're not. I'm sorry, they're not. The ISO is going to be how grainy the picture is, and I don't really understand it 100%, but I know that the lower the ISO, the clearer your picture is going to be. The higher the ISO, the grainier it's going to be. So you want it to be as low as you can. Your f-stop, I don't completely understand that. We're going to have Fred Boylan on sometime to talk photography and talk about that. That's basically the size of the aperture, I believe. And I think it's the bigger the aperture, more light comes in, but it's a shorter focal depth. And the narrower the aperture, it's a longer focal depth. So if you want just the foreground in focus and the background fuzzy, because that can really make a really interesting picture, you want a really big big aperture. And then, you know, if you want everything in focus, you want a really small one. But I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me. There's probably photographers out there yelling at their radios right now going, "What are you talking about?" But it's something along those lines anyway. Just mess with it. Google it. Figure it out a little bit, you know, learn your camera a little bit, but then just mess with the settings and you can produce some really cool pictures. One of my favorite ways to take a picture, I just have sort of a middle to low end Canon. It's not even an SLR. It's just a regular digital camera, but it does have that manual mode. I will turn my shutter will stay open for 30 seconds. That's the maximum it'll stay open. So I turn it up to 30 seconds and then I turn the ISO down as low as it'll possibly go, and then I adjust there's something that I can't remember what it is, but I can adjust a third setting now that will then give me the brightness that I want at 30 seconds, and I'll adjust the light in the room. And I'll take 30 second exposures of guns, or anything really, as long as it's not moving, obviously. And it produces the crispest, clearest, just absolutely beautiful picture. That is my favorite way to get a really, really good sort of high definition photograph of a still, object. I was going to call it a target, but I guess object works too. So, try that out. You definitely need a tripod for that because, you know, you turn it on.
You can't hold it.
No, it's got to be completely 100% still. So I've had pictures ruined by trucks driving by. you know, because the house shakes a little bit, the camera shakes on the tripod, and the picture turns out blurry. It's got to be 100% perfectly still. And the way to do that, even you pressing the button will shake the camera enough to set it to make it blurry. So what you end up having to do is use the timer function. Set the timer to 2 seconds, set the camera, click the shutter, and then 2 seconds later, it'll actually activate it while you have backed off away from the camera, so you don't even shake the floor while it is capturing the photo. So that's a really good way to take a really nice, crisp photo. So just some ideas for you know the listeners out there, if they want to take a good picture, those are some ideas that you can use. Another neat thing that you can do is using an HDR setting, and that's high definition range. And what that is, and a lot of smartphones, the cameras on smartphones now have this feature. What it does, it'll take up to 7 or 8 separate photographs. Usually on smartphones, it's 2 or 3, but it takes a very low contrast or low brightness picture, a medium brightness picture, and a very bright picture. And then it takes that, and it has a little computer program that takes the best parts of each picture and then merges them all together. So you have a really nice bright foreground, a really nice bright midground, and a really nice bright background, and it really gives you a surreal look of it's almost more like a painting than it is a photograph, but it really allows you to see detail far off and close up. So another option people can use if they have the HDR setting on their phone. But yeah, just experiment. And then once you've taken the picture, experiment with the editing software that comes with most phones and most cameras. You know, play with the contrast, play with the brightness, play with the curve settings, play with the colors and the saturation and all kinds of stuff like that. Just get in there and dabble around. Just have some fun with it, and you'll end up taking some nice pictures. And then, of course, please go to our Facebook wall and post them on Slamfire Facebook, and we'll all marvel at your artistic genius. So that's a very brief warm up on how to take good photos of your guns.
Cool.
So what do we talk about taking good photos with guns?
Well, there. Okay, go ahead. I don't know anything about that either.
Oh. All right. So there's really only one rule for two rules for taking a good photo with a gun. Keep your finger off the trigger and don't point the gun at anything.
I want to add another rule.
All right.
Make sure you have clothes on.
Make sure you have clothes on. Trevor, you send me that picture one more time, and let me tell you, we're going to have words. No, you want to be sensible in your photos, right? You don't want to, I mean, you see the morons on the, you know, Facebook and stuff, and they got their gangster gun. They're holding it sideways with the finger on the trigger, pointing it at the camera. Well, those guys are idiots. Don't do that. If you want to take a nice picture of the gun, pose nicely with it. Keep your finger off the trigger. Keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Look at your background. Look at your foreground. Look at yourself. Make sure you're presentable. Don't look like an idiot. Don't look like a redneck, drunk guy out in the woods hunting deer off the back of his pickup truck. Be respectful. I mean, we already
even
have...
even if you are that.
Even if you are that. And Red Ranch, there's no... We're not dissing you at all here at all, buddy. I mean, we know everybody, you know, we need all kinds of people to make the world go round. But we already have, as gun owners, a bad rap. People already think that we're crazy, redneck, drunk yahoos out in the back 40 shooting our guns off the back of our pickup trucks. We don't need to reinforce that with poor taste in our photos that we post up on Facebook. So if you're going to take a picture for Facebook, be respectful, be presentable, be safe in the picture. Like, portray yourself as being a safe person. Have the gun, like I said, in a safe direction. Finger off the trigger. Be smart about these things. And please, put your magazines in the right way. Don't put them in backwards like some people I've seen. So, yeah, that's all the advice I have for taking good photos with guns. You know, guns are cool. People, you know, this is a hobby for a lot of people, and people like to share their hobbies, so you want to take pictures of it. Just, you know, be smart about it. Don't post anything up that's going to get you in trouble.
So here's a question. What about backgrounds? I mean, this is going back a little bit to taking pictures of guns, but what's the best background for that sort of thing? Do you want a lighter background, white? Do you want dark? You probably don't want something that's similar to the color of the firearm, I wouldn't think. But do you want high contrast or somewhere in between?
That's a good question. You can do some really interesting things with a black gun on a black background. And you do that by bouncing light off of the different angles and different protrusions of that gun. And you can do that, but generally speaking, you're right. You're going to want, if you're shooting a picture of a darker gun, you're probably going to want a medium-toned background. The problem you run into, and this is one of the hardest things you can do, is taking a really good picture of a black gun on a white background. Because what you end up doing is the camera can only adjust for a certain brightness, and it'll often end up adjusting for the white background. And so what ends up happening is the gun is very, very dark, and you see none of its features. So having a black background or a dark background allows the camera to really open up the length of time the shutter is running, or maybe the aperture, or the ISO or whatever, and it allows it to capture some more detail. But you don't want black on black, of course, because you're just not going to get that same detail unless you can really run your lights properly. So usually a beige-ish kind of background is probably your best. Browns, you know, I've taken pictures on all sorts of things. I have a piece of paneling that I will take pictures of my handguns on because it's a nice kind of neutral brown background, and it allows the detail of the gun to kind of pop out. But yeah, your background is really important. The camera can only see so much, and so you got to give it as much advantage as you can.
Yeah. Okay.
So in terms of pictures of you, like of people, what kind of background should you have there? Well, it depends on where you are. If you're at the range, you know, the berm is a great background. You know, your target is a great background. That being said, if you're facing uprange with your firearm, again, make sure it's pointed at the ground, fingers off the trigger, and it's obviously empty because it's, of course, against range rules to point a firearm uprange. So make sure that, you know, you're not breaking any rules when you take your pictures either.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and the only other thing I can think of is relates to ammunition. You know, if you're taking photos where, you know, you're pointing the gun at the camera, or you're taking pictures of looking up the barrel, or any kind of different kind of shot like that, be real careful about where your ammunition is, and if you've got live ammunition around, you need to be very, very careful with that.
That's a really good point, is should you take a picture of the gun pointed at the camera? And you certainly can, and you can certainly do it safely by putting a camera on a tripod and setting a timer. And that way you can point your gun directly at the camera if you like, because that is an interesting effect. I have a cool video on my YouTube of the camera panning in front of the Beowulf AR, and you can see right up that massive barrel right into the chamber. But, you know, I had to be very careful. And this is what I do whenever I take pictures up the barrels of guns, is I take all my live ammunition and I put it away. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's not anywhere near the gun whenever I do that, because, of course, guns are designed to launch projectiles at very high speeds down the barrel, and I don't want to be down the end of the barrel whenever there's a possibility of that happening. So, yeah, you just got to be really careful about stuff like that. A lot of people don't like those types of pictures where you're pointing the camera at the gun, you know, because you're not supposed to point your gun at anything you're not willing to destroy. But there's some common sense there, too, right? If your gun is obviously unloaded, I don't have a problem with it. Just be very careful. I would almost go so far as to say, don't try that at home. But people are, just because I want to cover my butt, I think people are smart enough to know better, though. So use your own judgment. Do what you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable pointing the camera at the, or gun at the camera, then don't. You know, it's, everybody's got their own comfort level, and do not cross your own comfort level, because that's when people get hurt.
Yep.
So the last thing I guess we can talk about is, should you post pictures of your guns on Facebook? What do you think?
I don't, is that a rhetorical question?
It could be, but I want to know what you think. So no, it's not rhetorical.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not the type of person that's going to take a picture of all the guns I own all lined up and post it on there. That's, to me, that's kind of like a shopping list for someone.
Look at that. He's got a Savage 24. I'm on my way over. Savage 24.
Not that I think my friends are going to show up and steal my guns, but I don't know.
Your Facebook profile can be somewhat public.
Depending on your settings.
Your settings are not quite right and that picture gets shared with the wrong person, well, maybe that person has a cousin who just got out of jail and needs a new, AR or something or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to advertise, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a fine line. You don't want to advertise all your guns, I guess, but I don't have a problem with posting pictures of guns on Facebook. I do it. But again, it's your own comfort level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you got also have this, it's issues of other people who are anti-gun who may be on your friends list. You know, if you have, you know, family or whatever on your Facebook and they're not comfortable with that and you post a picture of, you know, one of those baby killing ARs. That, you know, that people get all up in arms about that.
Well, that's actually brings a good point. And sometimes I think it's important to post pictures of your guns mm-hmm. because we don't need to hide our hobby.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, if you can post a picture that irritates your great aunt Mabel, who's so anti-gun that, you know, Wendy Sukier is her best friend, you know, that maybe irritating some aunties like that is a good thing because it allows you to open a discussion. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not for the anti-gun people. And here's what's probably going to happen is the anti-gun people will pipe up and say something negative about you posting a picture on Facebook and you get to reply to it. You may not actually be doing anything to change that person's mind, but the friends who don't post comments who are reading your wall, they might be on the fence about guns. And so they might be reading that and they're going to read your calm, rational response and look at the emotional response from the other side and think to themselves maybe, oh, well, maybe there is something to gun ownership. Maybe guns aren't so bad. Maybe that's not what the media says that they are after all. So, you know, it's sort of a good way to kind of spread the word about, you know, gun ownership in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good way to open a discussion. Yeah. And again, for the reasons you stated, it's not always the person you're debating with. It's the other people that see it who get, or who are friends with that person or friends with you or whatever.
That's right.
That see it, those fence sitters. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you gotta, you know, I say advertise as much as you like, but at the same time, if you're not comfortable doing that, just don't do it. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, I post pictures of guns, go for it. And if you don't feel comfortable, just don't do it. And then problem solved.
Yep.
It's just that easy, really.
But then here we are on a podcast that's broadcast all across the country, you know, continent, and we're talking about what we own. So we are kind of, you know, it's a little bit different situation for us.
We're kind of already in the firearms community and very public about our gun ownership. So
yeah,
it's a little late for a cat's kind of out of the bag. The horse is like closing the gate behind the horse that escaped already. It's a little late.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've got pictures of almost all of my guns up on my Facebook wall somewhere or another, and it reminds me, I've got a couple new guns that I don't have good pictures of yet that I'm going to have to post up somewhere.
You see, I have very, very few pictures of any of my firearms, mostly just because I'm too lazy to take the pictures.
Well, I like to have them just even on my phone, just because mm-hmm. if I'm out and about and someone says, oh, you know, you like guns? Yeah, do you have an AR? Oh, do I have an AR? Check this out. Pull out my camera. Wow, you can own those? And then, you know, opens a conversation up for you.
Exactly.
So. Anyway, I think that's enough about pictures of guns. I hope it wasn't too boring for you folks. I hope you maybe learned something. If you have any questions about better photography, email Fred Boylan. I believe it's fredboylan@gmail.com. I'm not sure if he even listens, but he's a friend of mine on Facebook. He is a professional photographer, and he pulls off some amazing shots. So maybe we'll get him on sometime, and he can correct all of the mistakes that I made on this show. So, all right, well, why don't we move on to some listener feedback then? This first one comes to us from John, also known as the Owen Insulter. Do you want to read this, Owen? Or
No, go ahead. I think you should
read it. Okay, it'll be more appropriate if I read it for you. I'll read it as if it's from John. Oh, it is from John. Okay, so here he writes. I'll read it as if I'm John, although, no, I'm not going to do that. Cause I don't know what he sounds like. If it was 10X, I'd do that, but... Okay, he writes, hello again. Thank you for reading my letter on the show. I knew that would irritate Trevor. Haha. Last time, I vaguely remembered that if I insulted someone, I might get a response, and I knew it wasn't Matt because he was usually the one soliciting this behavior. But I didn't have time to go back and figure out exactly who it was. I eventually convinced myself it must have been Owen because the site clearly admonishes the state of his biography. which you still haven't written your biography, just by the way.
Okay.
Now, I realize it must have been Trevor, who I was supposed to vilify and in disdain, but instead, I seem to have verbally sucker-punched Owen, whose timid confusion is proof that I'm a bad, bad person. Indeed, if it weren't for people like me, he probably would have the confidence to leave his turnips and write that bio. With that in mind, I think it's the least I can do to offer an apology and add that in consolation. Oh, and add that in his... Oh, man, this sentence doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay. And
it does. You just can't read it.
That in consolation... See, there should be a comma right after add, yes, and then after consolation. There. So now I'm going to read it with two commas, and you're going to see it make sense. And add that in consolation, his photo is undoubtedly the most dashing and color-coordinated. So you know how to use a hyphen properly, but you didn't know how to use commas properly. So now you're just irritating me, John.
Now who's insulting who?
Yeah, I'm insulting you, John, for not using commas properly. Yes, I'm the comma police. yeah, he says, yours in Ron Burgundy, John. So, John, yes, thank you for writing back. And I think Owen has a response for you.
Do I?
Not a lot. I just made that up. I just wanted to put you on the spot, see what you can come up with.
Yeah, no, I have no comment to the biography thing. To be honest, it's kind of funnier this way.
It kind of is, yeah.
And, yeah, I would agree that it was Trevor that he was probably supposed to.
Yeah, you're supposed to insult Trevor. And yep. Then you get a response for sure. But clearly you get a response if you insult Owen too, because that's like kicking the little kid, like kicking a kindergartner kind of. He's like he's the nice one on the show, you know, and it's like kicking a little kid. So good job, buddy. You are clearly a bad, bad person and one who needs to learn how to use commas.
And as far as, yeah, pointing out that I'm the most dashing and color coordinated, that's just kind of weird.
No, that's right up your alley, isn't it? No?
Oh. Maybe not from John.
Not from John, right.
I don't know that I know John well enough to think that.
Well, he knows you well enough to insult
apparently.
You.
Yeah.
No, thanks, John. It was funny, both this week and last. Look, I got to tell you, when I read your email, because, like I said, it's not Owen that ever gets made fun of. When I read your email, I was almost, like, I felt bad for Owen. I'm like, oh, crap. Owen's going to have his feelings hurt over this. What's going on? What did Owen do? So I almost edited it out just and you know, because Owen doesn't come into the show notes to see it before. I could have deleted it and he never would have even known. But Trevor's like, no, I'll leave it in. Let's make Owen cry.
Yeah, that sounds like Trevor.
It sounds like Trevor. So anyway, thank you for clearing it up. And next time you can attack me if you like. Trevor does get a lot of the brunt of the insults and... He doesn't deserve it because he really is a nice guy. He's not like that Brian Bolivar guy. But I'm just tossing everyone under the bus tonight.
Wow, yes. I'm going to distance myself.
Brian's like way over in Ontario. He's like 16 hours from me. I'm safe for at least the night.
That's true. He is closer to you than to me. So
that is true. Yeah, he'd hit me before he gets to you. So hilarious. All right. Well, I want to bring us this next one here from Graham.
Sure. Graham says, just listen to your piece on the SKS.
Wow. That was quick. We didn't even broadcasted this show yet. And he's already, that last thing the other show we talked about, the SKS. I was going to say, you're good, Graham. You got some sort of time machine. Should I call you the doctor? Maybe? I don't know.
Okay.
Come on, what?
is that coffee still working?
It is. That coffee is still working. I have not had another coffee yet today.
Folks, don't ever buy this man a triple-triple, ever.
Oh, my God. It was an accident. I ordered two coffees, and my buddy Curtis likes his coffees to be sweet. He's got a sweet tooth, so he gets triple-triple. So I ordered him a small triple-triple, got myself a medium double-double. That's a standard coffee. So I'm driving to Curtis's place to deliver his coffee and go hunting for a bit. And so I start drinking my medium double double. Well, it turns out that they must have triple tripled my medium and not his. They double doubled his, and the Americans are losing their minds now, going, what the heck is a triple triple and double double? It's three cream and three sugar and two cream and two sugar, triple triple double double. That's how we order our coffee at Tim Hortons. Anyway, so not only was it super sweet, it was lukewarm. You know what that means? It was gone in about 30 seconds. I guzzled it. and I am still wired from that. There's no way I'm going to sleep for hours.
He walked into my house just bouncing off the walls. His eyes are the size of dinner plates. He's just like, oh.
And that's like 8 hours after I had the coffee. Now it's been 12 hours since I had the coffee. I am still just, they must have put like LSD or cocaine or heroin or something in it. I don't know what the drugs make you all crazy, but something. They got the drugs in the coffee. I don't know what's going on here. All right, sorry.
I think we need to forget. Yeah, we need to finish this email since we made it halfway through the first sentence.
I'll put my mic on mute. That way, if I start babbling again, you won't hear me.
I'm gonna start from the beginning.
All right, good call.
Probably like everyone else.
They forget what's gone on. Yeah. What? SKS and coffees.
All right. Just listen to your piece on the SKS and have to tell you there is no better rifle for deer hunting. I found a quantity of 7.6. He says 3, but I think
okay, it's 7.62 by 39. Okay, I'm unmuting the mic. I'm unmuting it because 7.63 by 39? Look, dude, that's cool. But yeah, I'm sorry. I'm gonna hope that's a typo. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm muting my mic again.
Okay. Says I found a quantity of 7.62 by 39 in soft point large game and had a lot of fun hunting with it. The only downside with my gun is my gun is tricked out too much. Yes, that is possible. And because of all the modifications, which included having to destroy the original takedown pins, there was no going back to the original. I ended up selling it, but plan on getting another.
Well, here's the good news about SKSs. They're not expensive.
That's right.
It's like Honda Civics. You can get them and trick them out, and if you go too far, it's okay. It's your mom's car. You can just give it back to her and buy another one. SKSs are kind of the same thing. You can just kind of do whatever you like, and if it turns out to be crap, just it's firewood, and get another one.
Yep. Goes on to say, to anyone planning on tricking out an SKS, I strongly suggest that you do the research on all available options to create an optimal firearm for what you want, because at some point, there is no turning back.
That is some advice we could have used earlier today. read all the instructions. What?
Yeah. Had I put more thought into it, I would have left it with the iron sights. Your show is great. Keep up the good work. And interesting, because as we were working on this SKS this afternoon, you commented on that about what a pain it would be for mounting a scope on it. Every time you took it down, you'd have to recite everything in.
Yeah, because as I understand it, the only place you could put the scope, there's only metal there is like on the dust cover. And that dust cover has to come off to clean the gun when you put the dust cover back on. Sure, it's nice and tight, but there's no way you're going to put it on the exact same spot each time.
Oh, that's right.
There's got to be a better way to mount a scope on an SKS. Not that I guess SKSs are really accurate enough to warrant a scope. Maybe? I don't know. Maybe they are. The ones I've shot haven't really been.
No, I haven't shot a lot, so I shouldn't really speak about it. I've never shot an SKS that fit me.
Oh, my goodness. The stock, it's like a 12-inch length of pull on that stock. Oh. I'm like punching myself in the face every time I pull the trigger. It's crazy.
Yeah, so I think that's a big part of it, because a big part of shooting accurately is being comfortable with the gun and the gun fitting you.
That's a good point, and I wonder if that's where a lot of the negative accuracy reviews come from with the SKS, is that the guns just don't fit the people shooting them.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to get a properly sized stock put on or, whatever, set it up so that it's...
Well, it'd be interesting to shoot one of the sort of tactical versions that has the, telescoping stock and pistol grip and stuff.
Right.
And see if that would, because you could adjust it to your fit, to your length of pull, if you could get better accuracy out of it.
Yeah, anybody out there who has an SKS setup that you get decent accuracy with, write us in. Let us know about it. Tell us the specs on it, how it works, and stuff like that. I'd be interested in just hearing about that, because that'd be neat.
Yeah. And cool. I don't think that, I mean, just to comment on this round, I'm not a big fan of the 7.62 by 39.
Trevor loves it.
He loves it, but I think I've said on the show, I'm not a big fan of it.
It's got the same ballistic profile, really, as a 30-30. Which is almost sort of a medium powered hunting rifle.
It's not even quite as powerful as a 30-30.
Is it a little bit less? I've always heard they're very comparable between the two.
Okay, I think it's close, probably for practical purposes, but
right.
Technically it's not as powerful. But
okay,
I could be wrong about that too.
No, just go right out there and say it.
I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
And if I say it firmly and confidently enough, it must be true.
People download this show off the internet, and everybody knows anything on the internet is true.
There you go.
So now we know the SK or the 7.62x39 is definitely the weaker of the two cartridges. Definitely. It's now written in stone, or, well, bits. Bites.
Yeah, bites. Yeah. I love those bits and bites. Okay.
But yeah, you were saying you don't like the cartridge very much.
I don't like the cartridge, but it probably, and I was going to actually say that because it is sort of close to the 3030, I mean, it probably is good enough.
Oh, I would say so. I mean, I've heard of many people who use their SKSs for deer hunting and no complaints. I've heard of many, many, many deer that have been taken with the SKS or the 7.62x39. So, yep. I mean, you can ethically, if you place your shot right, take a deer, white-tail deer. I'm not talking the big ones, but white-tail deer with a 2-3. Mm-hmm. Like, it's completely possible. So, and 2-3 is, you know, even a lighter projectile than the 7.62x39. So.
Yep.
But yeah, it comes down to the speed of the bullet versus the weight of the bullet. And if you look at, well, we don't need to get into ballistics. I was gonna go off on my little 2-3 versus 7.62x39 rant again, but it's probably not that important.
I think, and a big part of it is picking a round that is a good quality hunting round too.
Oh, absolutely! Don't use Milsurp surplus full metal jacket for hunting deer. I mean, first of all, most places that's illegal. So. Yes. You know, you get a good, proper expanding bullet, you're going to have no problem hunting deer with that.
Yep, yep. And know the capabilities. Don't be taking pot shots at deer that are 300 yards away with this round.
With an SKS that has a scope mounted to its dust cover.
Yeah.
That you didn't recite after last time you cleaned it.
I've never heard of anyone cleaning an SKS, but anyway.
Yeah, why would you do that? It's crazy talk. I mean, they're disposable, right? You shoot them when they get dirty, you chuck it out, grab another one. You buy them at a crate at a time, right?
If I ever shot mine and ever got it dirty enough, I would just shoot it until it didn't work anymore, and then I'd throw it out and buy another one.
Oh, it's funny.
All right. Now, we have an important email here next. So
here we go. Yes, from Edith. All right, everyone. Guess I'm getting ready to ask a dumb question, at least to you and most everyone that listens to your show. It's okay, Edith.
She knows everybody that listens to the show. That's impressive.
Well, most everybody, it says here. It's okay. I understand, Edith, you're about to ask a dumb question. No, Trevor really, he is that good looking. He really is. I know the picture on the face on the Facebook doesn't do him justice, but I know that's what you're going to ask, right? No? Oh. All right. She continues on. Styx is going to get mad and punch Trevor, I hope, not me. This is Edith, Styx's better half, as I understand it. So, I have learned about shotguns or about guns and shooting by listening to the show every week. She doesn't mention which show. And it's probably not this one, especially when
just
I'm hyped up on
it. Just to rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of Styx.
Right.
I think this is probably his better third.
Now Styx is going to punch you.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's hilarious. I hope I'm there for both. All right. All right. Okay. Sorry, Edith. We're butchering this. Okay. So I've learned a lot about guns and shooting by listening to the show every week. I shot a shotgun once in a blue moon and enjoy doing so. I have not shot one at any game. I always hear you talking about chokes. Explain to me why there is a difference and when you use them. Thanks in advance. Please excuse my spelling. I'd like to say that I'm German and my English spelling sucks, but my German spelling is not much better. That's okay, Edith. I would never make fun of you and your spelling. You even use your commas correctly. It doesn't even matter if she did or didn't. I'm saying that because she's cool. And I wouldn't want to irritate her because then Styx would punch me. All right, chokes. What are chokes? Well, so are you talking like gun dudes chokes where like it's the unicorn that gets choked by Carl? Is that where you're going with that? Because that's just like a kind of like a half Nelson, but you go around the neck there and you squeeze real tight until the unicorn goes down and says, shh, down, little guy. Not that one?
Probably not.
All right. Shotgun chokes. Do you want to explain what they are, Owen?
Okay.
Why not, right?
Well, I don't know. Okay, we'll start really basic because we don't know exactly what she's asking, but
well, let's just talk chokes. How do they work? Yeah. Why they're there? What different ones you can get?
Well, choke basically is something that screws into the end of your shotgun barrel that changes your the tightness of the pattern of the shot projectile in your that you're shooting out of the gun. So something like a cylinder is going to be your widest pattern. That's basically straight bore. It's the same. There's no choking at all happening. It's straight through.
The unicorn lives with the cylinder bore.
Yes. Most everything lives with the cylinder bore. Yeah. And then it goes, I mean, there's a lot of different ones that are very gradual. You have improved cylinder, which is a little bit tighter,
well,
but
actually
not
you
much.
Missed one. If you want to go through all of them.
Okay.
These are the list of the most common ones. It's cylinder, skeet, improved cylinder, light modified, modified, improved modified, light full, full, and extra full. And then it goes on to extra, extra full, turkey full, goose full, pattern master full.
Yeah.
All kinds of other ones. But yes, it basically, as Owen described, it's a tube that screws into the end that narrows the width of the shotgun. It's like putting your thumb over the end of a garden hose. If you put your thumb over the end, it squeezes the water and makes it go farther. It's basically the same things going on. The choke just, it squeezes the shot as it leaves the barrel, and that allows it to travel further in a tighter pattern.
Yes. Yes. Not necessarily giving it more distance. It gives it more distance tighter together.
Right. So isn't that what I just said? It gives you more distance in a tighter pattern.
Okay. You put a comma in there and it sounded like.
Right. Yes. No, it doesn't give you any extra distance. The pellets are always going to fly the same distance because they're subject to the laws of physics like everything else. But yeah, it allows you to, you know, so for instance.
The thing is with shotguns, if you look at bird shot, if you shoot a bird with one of those pellets, it's probably not going to kill it.
Depending on which bird it is, you're right. Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you might get lucky and you might have one shot that goes right where it needs to go. But that's why it's a shotgun and you have a lot of pellets. And it's
that's
the impact
right.
of a bunch of pellets that does the killing. And it gives you, you know, a greater chance because it's a big spread of them, right? So the idea is that at greater ranges, I just wanted to clarify this range thing.
Yeah.
At greater ranges, A tighter choke will give you greater range, not because the pellets are going farther, but the fact that you have more pellets closer together impacting your target at that greater distance.
That's a good way of explaining it. Good one.
It gives you the impression that you shoot farther because that's what we do. We say, well, it's later in the year. There's not as many leaves. I can see farther. I'm going to put, you know, a modified or a full choke in my gun for shooting grouse because I can reach farther that way. Well, you can't really reach farther in the sense that your pellets aren't traveling farther, but they are staying closer together farther.
Right.
So, yeah.
The typical yardages that you can expect with a cylinder bore, it's less than 20 yards. So you're talking 60 feet maximum with a cylinder bore. If once you go to modified, you can expect closer to 30 to 35 feet. So you're increasing your distance by 30 to 35 yards. And then a full choke is 40 or more yards. So basically, you kind of look at where is your typical target going to end up being out in the field, and then you put in the choke that you feel is going to be where your target's going to be at. And it's not to say that if you have a full choke, you can't shoot at something up close. You certainly can. You just have to make sure that if it's up close, aim for a part of the body that you don't care about destroying, because you're going to lose a lot of the meat, because it will do a lot of damage.
Well, and it is a bit of a double-edged sword. Okay, so yes, you have a full choke and you can bring down targets farther out. It also is more difficult to shoot targets that are closer in.
That's right, because the pattern is so tight that you're losing the whole scattergun effect of the shotgun. You want a nice wide, like you want a cylinder bore if you're shooting targets that are within 20 yards, because you get a nice big, you know, 5 foot, well, not 5 foot, it's like 30 inch spread of pellets to hit a, you know, nice small target. But if you have a full choke, you're going to have maybe only a 6 inch spread of shot at that distance. And you're going to, you know, you might completely miss a target.
Yep. And then you have things like, Pattern Master, chokes. I mean, there's lots of different chokes that do similar things, but Pattern Master is kind of one of the big names. It's what I use in my goose gun. And it does two things. it chokes it down like a full choke. So it brings the chop pattern tighter together at farther distances. But then the concept is also that it has these three or four little lugs on the inside that catches the wad as it comes out and slows that wad down for a split second. The idea being that you have to think about shotgun patterns as three dimensional. They're not just two dimensional. So you can think, if you shot a piece of paper, you could say, you draw a circle around it 30 inches or whatever and say, okay, that's my pattern. But that pattern is also has depth to it.
Yeah, so if you could take a snapshot of that pattern or those pellets right before it hit the target, they wouldn't all hit the target at the same time. There are going to be pellets in the front and pellets in the back. It's almost like a swarm yes. of bees going at something. And that, but it just happens so fast, you don't see it. You just see it two-dimensionally when it hits a target. But there really is a big three-dimensional mass of pellets.
And where that comes into play and is very important is when you're shooting something on the fly, something that's on the wing.
Yep.
Because you're having pellets that are impacting at the beginning of your shot string and maybe the ones at the end are missing completely, right? And so what the Pattern Master does is it shortens that shot string. So you have now you've tightened it and you've shortened it. So you have more pellets impacting the bird. And that's what it's all about, is getting the maximum number of pellets from your round into your target.
Right. So you talked about the wad earlier. What's the wad in a shotgun shell? What's it there for?
Well, the wad is there to basically cup and hold all of the pellets in front of the powder charge.
Right.
So it's kind of sealed. It almost acts like the paper in the old
muskets.
Yeah. Muskets. You know, it'll help seal the bullet. This almost acts like a seal for the
for the shot, basically.
Because
if you
shot,
think about it,
yeah.
if the shot was just poured in on top of the powder,
yeah.
it would just kind of, the powder would just blow through it because the shot's right. not one solid
exactly.
thing. So it's basically exactly. the thing that holds all of the shot. And like Owen said, it's a cup. Mm-hmm. It's a plastic cup and it holds all of it. So whenever it's shooting down the barrel, the pellets of the shot aren't actually touching the barrel. The plastic is. And that also helps with your distance because those little balls of shot aren't spinning yet. And as soon as they start to spin, of course, they're going to create that Coriolis or the whatever effect that is whenever something spins and it flies off.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, sure.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yes. Yep. No, and it's amazing the difference between chokes. I mean, I used to hunt with a modified on geese and we would, you know, if they weren't at point blank range,
you couldn't get them.
You just couldn't get them.
And now with your Pattern Master, you've talked about 70-yard shots.
Yeah, I've taken down ducks on the wing at 70 yards, which, you know, maybe more luck in the shooting than anything. But, it, you know, the fact is it still put the bird down.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's pretty neat to see. And then I practice because, again, the inside shots, the close shots are hard because you have to be very accurate. And we practice skeet shooting. For me, the backyard skeet that we do, you know, is not particularly difficult.
Yeah,
shooting.
It's not clay shooting, of course. It's skeet shooting.
Yeah, we're skeet
definitely.
Shooting.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, with the Pattern Master, it really isn't very hard. He throws out there and you've got all kinds of time because you know you can reach it because you've got, you know, the choke in there to be able to do that. And you can reach out and boom, it hits it. And as long as you know how to lead, and that's great. So what we started doing was, tossing, we would hand toss one out and try to basically get it out as far as we could. No, we wanted to keep it as close to us as possible, but still give ourselves time to get the gun to our shoulder.
Right.
And so we were shooting them at, bad breath range, really. If we could get it 2 or 3 feet out in front of the barrel when our gun was extended, that's what we were aiming for. And you had to be perfect.
You'd be dead on. Because, I mean, it's basically you're hitting it with a solid mass of pellets. Like, they have not had any time to spread yet.
Yep, yep. But what that does is it makes you very fast getting your gun into your shoulder.
Yep.
And then it makes you very accurate at close distances. So when the birds are, you know, bad breath range, when you come up, you can just head shoot them and just boom, boom, boom. And you get all your shots off quickly and accurately.
Yeah, and getting them in the head is, you know, again, you're damaging less meat that way, and you're
exactly.
It's a more effective killing shot, too. You're going to put them down that much quicker.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you want more information on how the chokes work, you can go to Briley.com, Briley.com. Click on the chokes button and then just scroll down, and there's a picture and a link that says Understanding Chokes. Click on that, and it's got a fantastic description that goes all the way from the simple childlike explanation right into the actual physics of what's going on with chokes. It's really interesting. Not a hard read. It's, you know, it's one page. It's not very long, and it gives you all kinds of really cool information on how chokes work. So something you can go check out, Edith, and anybody else if you'd like to. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, Owen, bring us this next one from Spencer.
Will do. He says, "Hey, guys, I just wanted to make a quick comment on Trevor's comparison between the M&P and the Glock. It was some really good info, but to me, one of the biggest differences is that the Glocks have those darn finger grooves in the front strap, and the M&P doesn't. I don't know why Glock added them, since the Gen 1 and Gen 2s didn't have them, and they handled just fine."
I'm going to agree with him right now, because I like that it's really roughly stippled in the front, but the fact that there's specific finger grooves, not everybody's fingers are the same size, Glocks, or Glock, Gaston, you know? Just leave it. And we'll just put stippling there, or just put aggressive stippling there, and that's all you need. You don't need finger grooves. I'm with you on this one, Spencer.
Yeah. I like it because it fits my hand perfectly.
Well, you've got the perfect Glock hand, yes. Apparently. Apparently, yes. They modeled all Glocks after Owen's hands.
Yeah. So he goes on to say, "For me, the grooves on the large frame Glocks, 10 millimeter and 45 ACP, fit perfectly. They do what they are supposed to do and lock the grip more around my fingers."
So what are you complaining about, Spencer?
"But on the smaller 17s and 19s, the ridges end up in the middle of my fingers, making the grip a lot more likely to squirm around than my flat-fronted M&P.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to mention that I caught Trevor's appearance on Armed Squirrels talking about bows. That was a great show, and I learned more about bows than I ever thought I really want to know. I know that Slamfire is a gun show, but I thought...
I'm editing this part. No. Cut this. Yeah. Cut. Bleep.
But it might be cool to do a bow episode someday. There should be enough overlap to keep people interested for one show at least. You know what I think?
We could just tell all of our listeners to go listen to the Armed Squirrels Project.
Well, I was thinking that could be the show Trevor does by himself.
Ooh, the time when we're busy. That's next week, right? Because we've covered his butt. Now next week he's got to do a show by himself.
There you go.
No guest. By yourself. Oh, wouldn't that be crazy? Just give him a big coffee and say, go to her. Let's see what happens.
Take him off his meds for a week. All right. So he says, "Lastly, and not about Trevor at all."
So he stopped listening right there.
Yeah. "Did I hear you say last week that the administration pulled back on the updates being suggested for your firearms laws?"
Yes, you heard that right.
Okay.
The Common Sense Firearms Act or whatever that was going to help out our firearms laws, it looks like it's been shelved.
Yeah. I don't think it's been eliminated.
It may not be eliminated, but for now, it's not being fast-tracked at all.
Yeah. He goes on to say, "I hope not, since that just reinforces the precedent that the gun control groups need to be given a sop whenever there's a tragedy involving firearms." I'm not sure what he means by sop.
SOP is usually standard operating procedure, but does that make sense in this case? I hope not, since that reinforces the precedent that gun control groups need to be given a standard... I don't know. Spencer, that sentence makes no sense.
"In reality, the government should be moving forward based on the undisputable evidence that it did indeed take a good guy with a gun to stop a bad one. Take care, y'all."
Thank you, Spencer. And aside from that one sentence there, that was a great email.
You've been hanging out with your wife too much.
I have?
Isn't she like on the grammar police? Isn't she?
Yeah, she has a badge and everything.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
I'm sorry. It's funny for me and her. She laughs and laughs. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yes, go ahead, write us an email with no punctuation, capital letters, make all kinds of typos. We'll give it to Trevor to read, and then Joel will listen and her head will explode, and that'll be hilarious.
Oh dear.
Cool. All right. Yep. Well, I guess it's time to wrap this sucker up. Shout outs. We've got one to Don. He submitted a Milsurp Chorus of Fire idea for the charity shoot. Just want to tell you, Don, Trevor loves the idea. He said he cannot wait to grab an SKS, just fondle that wood, a nice, nice, deep, rich mahogany, perhaps, and just shoot Milsurp all day long. He just loves 7.62x39 and yeah. Actually, it did look like an interesting course of fire, and we'll see if we can integrate some of it for the charity shoot, but just wanted to rub Trevor into the ground a little bit more. But thank you, Don, for sending that in. Trevor will get back to you on how much he loves the idea. Please be sure to join... Sorry, Owen, did you have any shout-outs?
Oh, no, I don't have any shout-outs.
No shout-outs at all. All right, fine. Be that way. See if I care. So please be sure to join both of our national firearms organizations, the CSSA and the NFA. They are out there fighting the good fight for us, and it may be a little bit tougher coming the next couple of months while we get through some of this backlash from recent events. But that's just all the more reason for you to go sign up, give them some money, help them out, help them help you fight this fight. So go do that if you haven't. And if you do sign up because of us, let us know. Send us an email. Slamfireradio@gmail.com. We love hearing about stuff like that. So, yeah, please. Also, check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We've got our own little forum there. And I saw Dirt McGirt and Double Up Buck there trading some jabs and having some gangster talk. So that was great. So maybe somebody else wants to go help, you know, class up the joint. I don't know. Whatever. So just tossing that out there. Also, please go like us on Facebook. It looks like we have 1,071 likes at this point. So that's pretty good. We're hoping for 2,000 by next week. Nah, just kidding. It'd be cool to get to 1,100 though, I guess. That's the next milestone. But yeah, no, we do all kinds of neat stuff on Facebook. We're always posting videos up there and having little conversations and chats. And then we always post the show there, with a little description, what it's about and stuff this week. So go check that out. Go like us on Facebook if you don't mind. Also, please be sure to check out the other great shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as a Crusader Podcast Network. Both networks are fantastic. The Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio is more geared towards just outdoors, anything outdoors. A lot of fishing on there. They have aviation shows. They have scuba diving shows, hunting shows, and our show, of course. So a lot of really, if you like being outside and talking and listening to people talk about being outside, that's a great network. And you can listen to it directly on your phone now. There's a little app you can download for free that just lets you listen whenever you like. So it's really cool. Also, the Crusader Podcast Network, it's an international podcast network and really, really good content on there as well. Lots of really good. It's mostly Second Amendment / just firearms stuff, but there's a diverse number of different shows over there, and all the guys over there are really good, and I enjoy listening to them. So please go check them out. So I guess that wraps up this show for this week. Owen, any closing thoughts?
No.
Oh. All right, then. Let down the listeners. Fine. I was hoping for something profound.
I talked for like 15 seconds straight earlier, so.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Now do 20 seconds.
Oh, no. I'm not going to work out for you.
Oh, well. All right. Well, hug your guns and...
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Oh, Trevor's going to love us. All right, see you next week, guys.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.